This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U-Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill and I'm Giri Balakrishnan. In many instances, rising healthcare costs have become a bigger burden than the ailment we may be suffering. With us today is Dr. Joshi Venugopal. He is the country president and managing director of Swiss pharmaceutical firm Novartis Malaysia to shed some light on patents, government policies and the public health supply chain which are driving costs higher. Good morning, Joshi, and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Giri. Happy to be here.
Thank you, Joshi. We have a number of questions for you today. According to global data, Malaysia healthcare segment is growing at 9.5% per annum, which is at twice the average growth rate of the Asia-Pacific region. In your opinion, what is driving this growth?
For me, the biggest drivers of healthcare spending is generally the demographics, the aging population. It is also the consumptions of medicine, the usage of hospitals, etc., medical tourism, if that is a part of your equation. So these are the factors that drive the Malaysian healthcare spending like in any other country. Malaysia's healthcare spending as a percentage of GDP is quite low compared to the global average, and therefore the room for growth is a lot higher for Malaysia.
Right. I mean, we actually have figures for that. Roughly translate to about 5% of our budget for the year. In fact, for 2018, the health ministry's budget is 27 billion. And this is 4% on-year growth. It's also what's in the back of my mind is the 3-5% annual rise in the cost of medicine. Are there any real efforts being made to contain this uptrend in the cost of medicine from the pharmaceutical company's side?
Yes. So, you know, that we follow a patent regime where after we lose the patent exclusivity, the generics will come in. So that would be the natural way the prices will go down. And Novartis has a generic arm, Sandoz, that taps into that market as well. So that is the way in which the industry has been structured. On top of that, we try to make drugs affordable as much as we can within the constraints of the economic needs of the shareholders, etc. For example, in Malaysia, we have given $1 billion worth of anti-cancer drugs free of cost for the patients in government, just to give you as one example. So we do put in an effort. But, you know, I know the prices of medicines is always a topic that
is, I mean, the act of actually providing that, it seems it's that social service, as it were, it is not an ongoing process. It's a one-off thing which would take place, you know, I say infrequent, at least. Mm-hmm. Now, I noticed that you had on you had a video on TEDx where you referred to the rising cost of healthcare, and I quote, as the biggest myth. Can you elaborate on this statement?
Yeah, most people think that better quality healthcare would cost more. And studies have shown that it is not true. And that is why I believe it is a myth, maybe the biggest myth in the healthcare. We have often seen that if you provide good quality healthcare, it can often be achieved at lower cost. We have seen it within countries and we have seen it across countries. Now, you look at United States, which spends very high on healthcare. Their life expectancy is much lower than many other countries that spend only a small proportion of their GDP in healthcare.
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of other factors that I think we would also have to consider, including cultural differences and also government policy differences between what different governments have in terms of policy in managing the healthcare industry. The implication by what you're saying, given the figures that we have just spoken of, is that weaker medical services environment is a key cost driver. But surely this also feeds into the pharmaceutical industry's growth as well. For example, you spoke of early detection reducing medical costs versus late detection. My suggestion is that detection stage may not necessarily reduce or eradicate the disease. In fact, early detection just means earlier consumption of the drugs that are being produced by the pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah.
So this doesn't necessarily reduce the cost of medical expenditure.
Okay, so if I rephrase your question, you are saying that, okay, what I proposed was that if you diagnose and treat diseases early and keep it at a milder stage, it is going to cost less.
Right.
But you are asking another way, you know, if you don't do that, and if we allow the disease to progress, you know, we don't have to spend on early diagnosis and treatment. It's a bit like, you know, close the eyes and, you know, assume that the world is dark. I think the problem with that statement is that we should look at healthcare as an investment and not as a cost. If you have early detection and treat people and they are productive in the society and they can contribute to the economy of the country, that is when you see bringing better returns. But most governments have an obligation to provide for the healthcare of the patients. And as the population is aging and as the share of the seniors in the electoral system becomes higher, governments cannot shy away from providing that responsibility. So even if you are not detecting it early, you would have to detect it at a late stage and pay a much higher price for managing it, at the same time compromising the ability of that individual to economically be productive to the society.
Okay. Now, Malaysia has generally been very opaque with a number of its policies, excise duties, foreign labor, even with pharmaceuticals, where in this country, pricing is not regulated. Much needed transparency may emerge with this new government that has come into force in Malaysia. Have you met the new health minister, Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad?
We both spoke at an event, so I didn't have a chance to personally, you know, exchange words with him. But, you know, yeah, we probably saw each other from a distance.
Okay. One of the key processes that leaves a lot to the imagination is the registration of new products into what is referred to as the Blue Book. Huh. Could you elaborate on the Blue Book and how the registration process works for pharmaceutical companies?
So there are two steps here. The first is the registration of the products that is done by the regulators. So we have to submit our clinical dossiers, they review everything, and then they approve the products to be sold in Malaysia, either in public or private. And then the Blue Book is a second step where it's a formulary access into the Ministry of Health. So we have to submit our dossier and say that this product offers a good value for money, and they will evaluate the merits of it, the safety, efficacy, convenience, cost, everything. And they would say that, well, would the Ministry of Health allow this product to be given to patients in the MOH hospitals?
But this is primarily for government hospitals or public hospitals.
Yes, the Blue Book is for the public hospital. The registration is across.
Right. A local daily, The Star, reported a couple of weeks ago that the health minister has actually set up a task force to look into recent alleged drug and medical supplies monopoly in Malaysia. Is this the environment that you've been operating under?
You are, I believe, referring under to the Bumiputra agents that are government contractors. As you know, it's not the pharmaceutical industry that has appointed Bumi agents. You know, it is a government policy mandated by the government. So it is not up to us to judge what is the value of Bumi agents or is it the right thing or not. It's up to the government. We will abide by whatever the government decides. In terms of the monopoly, I think you are talking about some Bumi agents, or it is alleged in some of the newspapers that very high proportion of the contracts is awarded to a small number of Bumi agents, and there is a little bit of consolidation in the market. That is something I would not know, the details, only the government would know. But I can tell you this, when you have so many agents, big pharmaceutical companies typically prefer to work with the agents first who has the financial backup to provide the bonds, who would not default on payments. So that is one criteria we look at. The second is we want agents with high compliance standards. Whatever commissions they receive, which is a small percentage, is 1-3%, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, there is nothing unethical behind it. So typically we would choose a few big players with a good reputation, and that due diligence is conducted by all pharma companies. And that is why we are a little picky, but still we work with many Bumi agents in the country.
But to a large extent, you would have to work with one key player in the market, Pharma Niaga, a public listed company, which is owned by government bodies who are major shareholders. Pharma Niaga effectively controls the delivery of drugs to public hospitals in Malaysia. Would you consider that to be a monopolistic presence?
That statement is not very accurate. Pharma Niaga only has exclusive rights for APPL items, which is a subsection of drugs. And that has been a government policy because, you know, it also requires the Bumi agent to do warehousing. They have to, you know, keep the stocks under them. And to the best of my knowledge, Pharma Niaga is the only Bumi agent, to the best of my knowledge, that has a warehouse. And that is why they are awarded this.
On the Breakfast Grill today is Dr. Joshi Venugopal, Country President and Managing Director of pharmaceutical firm Novartis Malaysia. Join us next as we discuss the Malaysian pharmaceutical supply chain and the potential impact of impending policy changes on prices. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9, the business station.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Good morning. You're listening to Breakfast Grill, and I'm Giri Balakrishnan. With us today is Dr. Joshi Venugopal to share his thoughts on the supply chain for pharmaceutical products and the potential impact of price regulation. Joshi, we were earlier talking about the supply chain structure in Malaysia and the complaints that we have had about a potential monopolistic arrangement. Now, there are many layers. You spoke earlier about Bumiputra contractors through which you prefer to work to have your drugs distributed or pharmaceutical products distributed to hospitals. The question really is, do we really need to have this many layers? Don't these layers create additional pressure on pricing and on cost for the end user?
In this case, we are supplying our medicines to the government, and it is up to the government to decide who are the intermediaries they want in this process, and it would be up to them to judge if that is worth the money and the margins that they pay for it. It's hard for me to comment.
So really the burden of this higher cost is something that can and should be dealt with by the government rather than from source, which would be the pharmaceutical company. But that just goes back to the issue of pricing not being regulated in the first instance, which means your entry into Malaysia for a particular drug, drug A, for example, the pricing compared to the same drug in another country, Thailand, could be significantly higher simply because your pricing is not regulated.
Mm. Okay. So, Giri, you've raised two important points. The number one is about the pricing regulation. Any decent economist will tell you that price regulations typically do not work in mid to long term. It may have a short-term beneficial effect, but it doesn't work in mid to long-term. Let's say, for example, that you know you regulate the rents of all the houses and apartments here. People will stop constructing houses, and eventually, you know, there would be the supply and demand will not work out, and you know people will start to split the houses and make it into two, and you know all sort of things. It won't typically work. So this is a classical example of a perverse incentive. And one example that comes to my mind is during the French colonial rule in Hanoi, there was a big rat problem. There was too much rats. And the government announced an incentive and said, okay, for people who bring the rats to the government office, we will pay you money. And the government naturally thought that the people are going to kill a lot of rats and the problem will be solved. But instead, what happened was people started growing rats to make money, right? So these are the classic perverse incentive. You know, price controls typically doesn't work. Now, in terms of the pricing across countries, we try to price according to various parameters, including the economic status of the country. So we try to make equity wherever possible. And of course, you cannot expect Somalia and Singapore to pay the same price. And we are socially conscious when it comes to pricing.
Now, there has been some proposal from the previous government, a pharmacy bill, which I think in particular may address this issue of pricing regulation. What we understand is that this pharmacy bill is actually sitting with the Attorney General at the moment. Whether it would be ratified or not, of course, we wouldn't know at this stage. But what is the implication for Novartis if it is ratified and there is pricing regulation introduced in Malaysia?
I don't know the specifics of pharmacy bill, so I would not be able to comment broadly. But if it comes to pricing regulations, you know, it would be a big disincentive for all pharmaceutical companies, not just Novartis in Malaysia. Number one, Novartis employs roughly 2,500 associates in Malaysia, right? Out of which only 300 are involved in the sales and marketing related jobs or introducing the product to the Malaysian market. The rest are either in manufacturing contact lens that is exported to many other countries, or for the Novartis Global Shared Service Center. So Novartis back office operations are run from 5 centers in the world: Dublin, Prague, Mexico, Hyderabad, and Kuala Lumpur. So we invest quite a lot in that. So it will give a very negative signal in terms of the investments that we have made, and we value Malaysia as a country that values free trade and free market economic principle. So the business sentiment would be quite bad if something of that were to happen.
But that doesn't mean that there will be a departure of Novartis from Malaysia, because we still tend to offer quite a significant market in the Asia-Pacific region.
Of course, you know, we have an obligation to provide medicine, but it would mean Malaysia will be viewed in general by the business community as an economy that is not acting in terms of free market economics of demand and supply.
Right. Okay. Now, let's talk a little bit about patent strategy and product lifecycle management. These are key tools for managing market position. How has the emergence of competing generic medicine shifted the balance in recovery of development costs for Novartis?
We fully respect the patent law, and we fully respect the fact that after a certain period, generics are allowed to enter. That's a model that we work, and we also have a generic arm, Sandoz, as I mentioned before. And the reason why the incentive is structured like this is because the society wants the companies to innovate, not just use and leverage the existing product, but come up with new treatments for diseases that are requiring new treatment. So we get a bit of incentive, but in the meantime, we have to work for the next big drug, right, to treat the next major disease. So that is why the cycle is made that way, and I think it's working fairly well. And we are working with the regulators to say how can we reduce the review period of now, which is roughly equivalent to 15 months. We are asking them, why can't we do it in 3 months? Saudi Arabia does it in 1 month.
To bring it to market quicker.
Yes, yes. As long as the reference countries like the US and the EU approves it, and they have done extensive review of the clinical data, and can we piggyback on that and use a reliance pathway to accelerate the drug approval so that the patients in need get the medicines early as possible?
In terms of the patent tenure, there isn't a universal law. It's a different number of years for different regions or different countries. Do you see this being standardized across the board at some point in time?
There's a lot you can standardize, not just in patent law, but because of the sovereignty of the countries, I don't think this happening in the near future. Even the drug approval process that, Giri, you mentioned before, one could say, why can't we just have one drug approval process across the ASEAN countries? And there is an effort going on for many years, but it has not borne fruit. Like Europe, for example, does one review for all the countries. Why can't we do the same thing here? I mean, we would have to spend less money having large departments doing this in all the countries. It would be much faster, more efficient, and high-quality reviews. So these are all theoretically very possible, but countries typically don't want to give up their sovereign right to make those decisions.
Sure. You mentioned earlier that Novartis has a manufacturing facility here in Malaysia, but this is purely for contact lenses.
Correct.
Why hasn't Novartis considered setting up a manufacturing plant here for your other drug?
You see, it's not possible for a company to have manufacturing footprint everywhere, because manufacturing has to be done in very tightly regulated, and we want to have few manufacturing plants so that we can focus on them and run it very well. So I'm very happy that we have one plant here in Malaysia. Could it be more? Yes, but it's unlikely in the near future.
Right, because the Malaysian government, I think recently we had a company which set up a plant in Malaysia called Biocon. They have a 3-year government supply contract worth 370 million ringgit. So there are incentives which are being provided by the Malaysian government to encourage manufacturing facilities to be set up here in Malaysia. And is keen to know why Novartis is not looking at that option to use Malaysia as a launchpad for the ASEAN region.
Our focus has been lately on the Global Service Center, right? This is what creates a lot of jobs, and that's part of the knowledge economy, right? And the manufacturing sector is prone to a lot of automation, et cetera, in the near future. And I don't believe that the old or the current type manufacturing facilities will exist in the next 30 or 50 years. It's going to be much more smaller, modular. So for us, our focus has been more on the service center, which creates a lot of jobs in IT, in back office HR, back office finance, etc. And as I said, we are one of the five global service center. We have more than 350 associates in that team, and it's growing.
That was Dr. Joshi Venugopal, Country President and Managing Director of Swiss pharmaceutical company Novartis Malaysia. I am Giri Balakrishnan for BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, Frost & Sullivan Malaysia's mobile data service provider of the year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.